This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome to Music for Life, music from DePauw. This week, we're back from fall break and previewing some exciting upcoming performances of a guest pianist, the University Chorus, and the Chamber Singers. We also chat with our jazz ensemble director, Dan Foster, about what's up his sleeve for the upcoming concert. We go into the classroom to talk about music in New York City. We have a profound 5-minute iPod, and we chat with the DePauw Chamber Players about the music of Schumann, Clark, and Larson. There are lots of exciting things happening in the School of Music this week, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life.
On Monday, October 29th at 7:30,
in Kresge Auditorium,
University Chorus presents Gypsy Music.
And here to chat with me about it are our new hosts of Music for Life, Greg Risto and Claire Wilkinson. Welcome.
Hello.
Now, for those of you who are regular listeners, you know that Greg Risto is our conductor and Claire Wilkinson is musical star extraordinaire, just recently come off her successful 4-day run as the baker's wife.
Yes, it was a great time.
You were great. You were
Thank
fantastic.
You.
And you know, she designed the costumes as well.
Exactly right. And my kids loved you. They were really...
They were adorable in the front row.
There you go. Tell us about this concert.
Well, it's part of Arts Fest, and this year's Arts Fest theme is Art and the Other. So we've decided to do all gypsy-themed music, including some authentic gypsy music and various Western composers' takes on gypsy music.
Ah, cool. So, for example, who are some of these composers?
Bizet. We're doing Habanera from Carmen.
And of course, Claire is playing the role of...
Carmen. She's a lovely lady.
Typecasting.
Pardon me. Pardon me.
And who else are we doing?
We're doing the Brahms Gypsy Songs of Zigeunerlieder, which are just delightful.
They are.
They're about 15 minutes for piano and choir, and John Klodfelter is playing and just doing a stunning job.
Fantastic.
Fire comes from that piano. It's really wonderful.
Brahms was so tied into that style of Hungra. He really loved that.
I'm a big fan. Orchestrally, on piano, chorally, he made it happen. His entire oeuvre. It's really wonderful.
And you know, it's really kind of funny because you think about Brahms, you know, we think about the big beard and the staid classical musician, but
you know, he never went to conservatory, actually.
He was not corrupted.
He was not corrupted. he wished to be corrupted, but he never got the chance.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So what else is on?
We also have a piece arranged by Nick Page called Nishka Banya, which is a Hungarian tune, and that'll be with clarinet and piano, actually three hands. It's sort of a funny little arrangement. And then we're doing Kodály's See the Gypsies is the English title. It's for women's chorus, and it's over about as quickly as you blink. It's lightning fast and just a delight.
So it's a part of Arts Fest, that exciting thing here at DePauw, and lots of different musical groups come together to make it happen. And this sounds like a very exciting look into the other, which is what this is about, and the other. This is going to be a fascinating concert, and you won't want to miss it because it is...
Monday, October 29th.
In Kresge Auditorium
at 7:30.
Thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
This year we have a new faculty select series. These are performances by our faculty, but they're also performances by people our faculty have invited to come to DePauw to perform. We have a piano recital coming up right around the corner, and our guest was selected by May Pong, one of our piano professors at DePauw. So welcome, May. Tell us how you decided to select this person and invite them to campus.
I always think that it's important for the students to experience a wide range of teaching styles and musical ideas. So in terms of selecting guests for the school, it's as diverse as possible. Mm-hmm. So I like to do a different nationality, different educational background, and things like that. The upcoming guest, Juyeon Kang, I had met her at Mozart Piano Commission in Thailand, where we were both adjudicating. Mm. And so I thought, since she is teaching at Northwestern College in Iowa, it's not too far away.
Right,
we thought that might be a good idea for, because it's also a small college. That the environment is similar, but yet dissimilar.
Mm-hmm. And is she a specialist of any particular type? Or?
No, she had actually spent her sabbatical year working in Austria, studying with various pianists there. So I think her post-sabbatical was rather focused on the Viennese repertoire.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we'll look forward to hearing her here in performance on November 3rd.
And she will also be giving a masterclass for our pianist on November 4th.
What a wonderful opportunity. Our students have so many guests coming to town. They get to hear them perform. And then when these guests are kind enough to also offer a masterclass, that's a wonderful opportunity as well. And we appreciate you inviting her to campus for us.
Most welcome.
Esther Lu and Professor Christopher Lynch are joining me in the studio to talk about a new course in the School of Music this semester entitled Music in New York City. How are you?
Good.
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yes. So tell me a bit about this class. This is an unusual topic. It's part of our topics course.
It is a little unusual, but it's nice to be able to offer a course that has kind of geographical specificity.
Mm-hmm.
It's designed as an upper-level course, meaning the students have already had their general survey of music, so they've gotten their feet wet in terms of music history.
Right.
So kind of the real idea is to just add a little specificity to that. So what really was going on in America and in New York, as opposed to just kind of throwing everything at them like they do in the Music History Survey.
Right, the Music History Survey, of course, is everything from Banging on Rocks to the Beatles.
Right, exactly.
Shoved together. Right. And then now we drill down onto one of these topics, and yours happens to be about music in New York City. Now, is this music in New York City since New Amsterdam, or is this...
No, it's really from the late 19th century through 1970 or so. Hmm. So we start by tracing the emergence of the major musical institutions, the New York Philharmonic, the Metropolitan Opera House, Carnegie Hall, institutions like that. Also, mm-hmm. Tin Pan Alley, we talk about popular music too. Mm-hmm. And then we're really going to end by looking at Leonard Bernstein's tenure at the New York Philharmonic. And
that's a great culminating target there.
Sure, absolutely.
Those were some great years for the New York Phil.
Oh, sure. And really kind of the main thrust of the course, we're looking at everything through a kind of highbrow, lowbrow lens. Mm. So mm-hmm. we're kind of figuring out where that cultural rift between high art and low art came from, especially as we trace the rise of these institutions. And of course, Bernstein then in the New York Philharmonic in the 1950s and 60s is such an interesting place to conclude.
Absolutely. So Esther, what brought you to the course?
I particularly like the reading materials he assigned us, because at first I see there's no textbook, something like that. We don't have that. And I was like, I don't know this reading materials. And then after reading them, I feel like, whoa, these kind of things have really logic connections to each other. They're really interesting at driving us to read and to think mm-hmm. and to do research.
And have you begun your research yet, or are you still deciding on a topic? Or
we're just kind of at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a great opportunity to really have an in-depth look at music in New York City. We often tend to try to look at things in a monolithic way. Oh, mm-hmm. all classical music was mm-hmm. this thing, or all music of this period was this. But when we can take a moment from that and drill down a bit, we find out there's really some fascinating variations inside that.
Yeah.
Sure. There was a lot going on in New York City at this time.
Oh, there's too much to talk about.
Right. Too much for a single course, much less if it were a subject in the middle of a survey course, which, you know, okay, we're going to give 4 minutes to New York City.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah. One of the great things about that, though, is it gives students a lot of options for research papers. So SJ is looking at Anton Seidl, who was a conductor. Started conducting Wagner's operas in Germany.
He was a copyist for Wagner.
Right, and then moved over to the Metropolitan, and in the 1880s and 1890s started spreading Wagnerian theories and aesthetics. Mm-hmm. So she's kind of looking at the rise of Wagnerism in the late 19th century in New York. Pretty cool topic.
Yeah, very cool.
I have other students looking at the emergence of modern French opera in New York, the first performances of Tchaikovsky's symphonic works in New York. So mm-hmm. really cool things, a really wide variety of paper topics. It's a fun
and
class.
And Mahler's role with the New York Phil?
We are looking a little bit at Mahler's role, yeah. He was only there for a couple of years, but it's a fascinating couple of years.
Right.
He wasn't received very well.
So what have you found particularly interesting? Is there a particular topic of music in this period and in this city that you've found captivating?
I like Tin Pan Alley music.
You've got the sweetest little way. I like to watch you all the day.
Really, do you?
Yeah, it's like the start of all the popular music.
Really great American song.
There. Oh, fantastic songs. Yeah.
Stuff that somehow we've lost the fun of.
Yeah, the approach to melody and the wit of the lyrics.
Right.
It's different today, you know, so it's really fun to look back at the music.
Are you looking at it as a highbrow, lowbrow? Are you using the Levine book, Highbrow, Lowbrow?
We are, yeah. We read a good amount of that book in the first couple of weeks of class. Especially Tin Pan Alley positions itself as lowbrow, and gladly lowbrow. So it's interesting to look at it that
way. Yeah, it embraces that.
Exactly.
Well, this is a fascinating course. We're glad you brought it to us, and thanks for coming in today to chat about it.
Thank you.
In a cloud beyond compare, you're the loveliest girl that one could see. And when I tell there, and I'm certainly going to tell them that I'm the man whose wife one day you'll be, they'll never believe. Never believe me. That's all.
a club beyond compare. You're the loveliest girl that one could see.
We're in the midst of Arts Fest here at DePauw University, this year's focus being art and the other. Lots of exciting things happening across the spectrum of the arts. And joining me to chat about their participation in this with an upcoming recital, which will be on Tuesday night, are the members of the DePauw Chamber Players. Welcome, folks.
Thank you.
So we have here Dan Risner, Eric Edberg, and May Pong. What's in store?
Well, we're going to be hearing music by three composers, each of whom relates to the theme of art and the other. We have Robert Schumann, born in 1810, died in 1856 at the young age of 46, who relates to art and the other in two ways. One is that he declined into mental illness and was in what they then called an insane asylum the last 2 years of his life. And mm-hmm. So he's one of those kind of people that we think of the other, the marginalized, the mentally ill. Before then, he was a great champion of the new cause of art music and mm-hmm. German Romanticism, and he looked at people who didn't appreciate art music in the way that he and his close circle of friends did as what he called Philistines. Mm-hmm. So he saw other music as the other and mm-hmm. and people who didn't have the same level of taste and understanding as the other. So Schumann for us represents art and the other in that sense.
And so what are you playing of Schumann?
We're playing his D minor piano trio, which is a work full of passion and angst and complexity and occasional outbursts of joy.
Right. Was this later in his career or earlier?
It's kind of midway through his output.
Because we know, you know, as he declined, his music got ever more otherish. He was still writing when he was in the institution, and some of those things are practically undecipherable.
Yes, and this, you know, nobody knows exactly what his diagnosis would be today, but he had these incredible manic bursts, mm-hmm. so he might well have been diagnosed as bipolar, and he wrote this piece very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. He'd actually been inspired by his wife, Clara, who was a great concert pianist, who was the first one in the family to write a piano trio, and then he quickly wrote some piano trios after that, and this was one of them, and he wrote it, I think, in the space of 2 or 3 weeks.
Right, yes, so. And some weeks turning out many songs in a single week because he was in one of those manic mm-hmm. modes and took off. A fascinating story with Schumann because he was married to the greatest pianist of the time, Clara Schumann, and also because he championed Brahms. And then there's always the question of, were Brahms and Clara involved, or what was the relationship of the three of them? And so he is a great choice for the other, because it's a sad tale as he faded away and had a constant A ringing in his ears and lost his ability to conduct, and his finger stretching incident lost his ability to be a pianist and became more of a critic and composer over time. Who else is on your program?
Another of the composers would be Libby Larson.
Ah.
We're doing a transcription of her originally a piano quartet, mm-hmm. Four on the Floor. I like alliterations. It's really nice. And so now it's three for the road. It's based on Boogie Woogie, and so I'm imagining three of us kind of in a little Beetle.
Yeah.
Beat up car.
Driving around the country, stopping in different
in
pubs.
Indiana, right? Yes. So, yes, it's very exciting work, and in a way that is part of the other,
right,
where we don't necessarily associate something of that nature with classical music.
Right. Boogie Woogie classical music is not a major genre in a record store. Not that we have record stores anymore anyway, but
much more common now though, with the fusion.
Yes,
with classical,
right, exactly.
And other. Yeah.
Very good. And what's the final piece?
The third work we're doing is the Rebecca Clark Trio. And that, I believe, it was composed in 1921. It's a very interesting work, and it's very impressionistic in its compositional style. It's in three movements, and that is the work that will start the program Tuesday mm-hmm. evening.
Are some of these works more challenging than others?
I think the Boogie Woogie Trio, which is not your straightforward Boogie Woogie, it's definitely a great contemporary American composer embracing Boogie Woogie, but making it very complicated with some extended techniques on the instrument. And it goes very fast, is what she calls a breakneck tempo. So that has been a challenge to put together. The Schumann, in particular, the first movement is very complicated with lots of intertwining lines and lots of subtleties of phrasing and rubato. And I think that's been the one that we've spent the most time working out.
In fact, yesterday's rehearsal, we spent over an hour on the first movement, just making sure of the transitions and just the right sound. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very brooding, it's very lamenting, the slow movement especially is very sad and melancholy.
I love Schumann's second
and
movements.
And he does not resolve it. There's an unresolved cadence at the end of that movement, which then is a taka into the last movement, which is a joyful march to the end. It's the spectrum of moods that you would expect.
Especially from Robert Schumann. Yes, exactly right.
I wanted to say one other thing about the Rebecca Clark Trio. This is one of two pieces that she wrote for composition competitions that were sponsored by Elizabeth Sprague Coolidge, who was a great patroness of the arts and was also a neighbor at the time of Rebecca Clark. And in the first competition in 1919, she had tied or even actually kind of won the competition when the jury looked at the blind scores. It was scores without the name of the composer, and beat out Ernst Bloch, who was, of course, a giant of the composition world. And they were so afraid it would be a scandal that this woman, as a matter of fact, some people didn't believe it could actually be her, that it was some male composer that was using Rebecca Clark as a pseudonym,
possibly
even Bloch, people speculated. So they gave the prize to Bloch, and then 2 years later, she wrote this piano trio for the next round of the competition, and again, it didn't win. But we see Rebecca Clark as an example of how women were marginalized, and you would talk about, oh, it's so surprising a woman can compose, or Rebecca Clark is the greatest woman composer between the wars period.
Right.
That's very true. And I was reading about Schumann and how he, in fact, marginalized Clara.
Exactly.
And he wrote to her in a letter that, wouldn't it be enough for you to be my wife and my caretaker and homemaker?
Right.
Isn't that enough for you?
Yeah, isn't that a history of that? And then Mahler telling his wife, telling Alma, there's only one composer in the Mahler family, and that's me, even though Alma was a fine composer in her own right.
Women were marginalized into a certain
role. Yeah, absolutely right. So true.
Yeah, and so now nobody says, oh, Libby Larson is one of the great women composers of our time.
Right, exactly.
Libby Larson is just one of the great composers of our time. And Libby Larson is one of the American composers who embrace American popular idioms and incorporate them into her music, unlike so many composers, especially in the first half of the 20th century, who looked at popular music, and especially music that came out of the African-American community, like jazz and ragtime and boogie-woogie and blues, as threats to art music.
Right.
And so we see this final piece that we're playing, this boogie-woogie piece by Libby Larson, as representing a kind of de-othering things. So it's a really exciting program to prepare.
Well, we appreciate your taking time to come in and chat with us about it. And Dan, May, and Eric, we wish you great luck. Break a leg on the stage. We look forward to hearing you Tuesday night as part of Arts Fest in Thompson Recital Hall at 7:30.
Thanks
for coming in.
Thank you.
On November 2nd, Friday night at 7:30 in Kresge Auditorium, we bring back the Jazz Ensemble after their very successful first performance of the year. So I've asked Dan Foster to come in and tell us about what he's cooked up for the jazz band for concert number two. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
So your first concert was a big success.
I guess so.
I have to tell you, you guys played for so many events in a row there, but the big band out on the steps on a beautiful Saturday afternoon for the big family weekend picnic. Those guys were fantastic. Now, I know you were otherwise occupied at that time. I forget what the excuse was. It was pretty minor. What was it?
I did get married.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. You got married. Yes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And so you were off getting married. And just to show the energy of this band, I said, hey, Dan's getting married this weekend and you guys can't take this gig. And you said, no. They'll do it without me. And they did. They did a great job. They're well prepared.
Yeah.
So we've heard a lot of the band this year, and they've done some really fantastic stuff. So I'm sure you've got something else up your sleeve. What's on this program?
This program, I'm planning to do a little more modern jazz. We'll do some of the standards, some of like the Neil Hefti, Count Basie, Sammy Nasico tunes, a couple of those.
You can't do a big band without that. You know, that's just what we're about. Yeah,
I really like mixing it up for everyone.
So what do you got on that side of the program?
Well, we're looking at doing Neil Hefti's arrangement of Cute.
All right.
And then from the Basie Straight Ahead album, it's Oh So Nice.
That is a great chart. And that Basie Straight Ahead album, if you don't know anything about Count Basie, that's the album to get.
Definitely.
Fantastic.
I'm also looking at doing a Bob Florence tune titled Jewels, and it's actually a vocal feature that Julie Andrews, you may know her from The Sound of Music.
Right.
She's on the original recording with Bob Florence's big band.
How about that?
And it's a song that features vocal, but without any words. It's using like syllables. And
very cool.
Yeah, it's a real nice piece, a real nice slow
Who's
ballad.
Singing that for you?
That would be Jennifer Peacock.
Great.
Be singing that. Yep.
Coming off the piano over to sing, you know, she's
yes.
kind of the dual weapon there, pianist and singer.
Exactly, yeah.
Good. Now what's on the other side? Now you're going to switch away from the more traditional historical perspective of the Jazz Ensemble and take us into some new world?
Yes. Kind of to bridge that gap, we have Buddy Rich's Mexicali Nose. Going to do that. They'll be holding on to their seat for that one.
So will the audience. Yeah, that'll be good.
Also looking at Les Hooper's his composition, Chicken Yard Social.
He's got a thing with chickens, doesn't he?
He does.
I mean,
how
many tunes does he have with the word chicken in the title? I mean,
I've counted at least five so far. Yeah. And I haven't even heard all of
his
recordings.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You actually hipped me to this tune here, a Radiohead tune arranged by James Miley, Everything in Its Right Place.
That is such a hip tune. How's the band liking that tune?
They really enjoy it. Really like it.
You know, and that is such an unusual, I mean, I don't know much about Radiohead. I'm tragically unhip in that way. But this chart is so cool, and it's so unusual. It's such a different flavor. No matter where you put in a concert, you know, I don't know where you're sticking that thing, but that's very, very effective chart. That's great writing.
It really is. Going even more towards the rock idiom, we're going to feature a tune by a friend of mine from North Texas. He's now living in Los Angeles, has his own big band out there. His name is Dave Richards. And we're going to play actually a couple of his compositions, arrangements. One of them here is titled Star Scream. And it's a real fast drum and bass style groove tune and
very cool.
Almost heavy metal-ish sounding.
Really?
North Texas is known for a very aggressive style of big band charts.
Right down the Buddy Rich vein, yeah.
Yeah, even more extreme.
Yes. Yeah, right.
And this may be one of the quote-unquote angriest tunes I've heard. And my friend Dave did an amazing job writing this piece, and it's recorded on one of the 2 o'clock Lab Band albums.
Ah.
It's amazing. Dave Richards is actually the only person who made the 1 o'clock Lab Band down in North Texas playing trombone and trumpet.
Wow.
He was third trumpet for many recordings for 3 years in that band. And then the lead trombone player got called to play in the Army Blues. And he made that band, and then Dave came in for one semester and played lead trombone with the band.
Wow, a switch from third trumpet to lead trombone. That's quite a jump.
He has had 12 of his charts recorded by the 1 o'clock Lab Band within 4 or 5 year span.
Wow. Yep. I bet our guys are digging that chart.
They really, really enjoy it. And that'll feature Connor Allen on bass. He has little solos up front, and it's actually a very tough bass part, but he's doing well on it so far, so it'll be really fun.
Wow, that's cool. And then we have that and everything in its right place. These have to be Indiana premieres, probably, for both of those pieces.
Probably, yeah.
And good to bring this to the Midwest. So you've got an exciting program coming up. I can't wait to hear it, and thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you very much.
Arts Fest will come to an end soon, but the concerts will continue, and we welcome back our frequent visitor, chamber singers conductor, Dr. Greg Risto. Welcome.
Thank you.
Because we have a chamber singers concert right around the corner on Sunday, November the 4th at 3 p.m. Tell me a bit about this performance.
We're excited about this. We've actually invited Voce, which is a choir based in Indianapolis, to join us for the program. They're a semi-professional chamber choir of 24 voices. And of course, chamber singers is also 24 voices. And so we have planned a lot of music for two choirs, the antiphonal pieces where the choirs sing back and forth to each other, and some pieces where they combine and sing together as well. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun to collaborate with them.
That's an interesting opportunity for our students, because they just had Vachasade here, where
did
a masterclass, and then they were invited on the stage to sing.
That was a real treat.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I was sitting in the audience, and I thought, I wonder why everyone's sitting in the front row, dressed in black.
Yep.
And then I found out, which was a great opportunity. And now the opportunity to split a concert with another choir, that's a remarkable opportunity. And I understand you're doing The Peaceable Kingdom.
Some movements from it, from Randall Thompson's Peaceable Kingdom. That's
right. That's such a great piece.
That's a wonderful piece. I adore it. And the last two movements of that are written in eight parts. And so that's
Perfect.
Where we get the double choir element of that. We're also doing a number of pieces by some local Indianapolis composers that I'm excited about. Voce will perform two pieces by Dan Forrest, who's based right here in Indianapolis. And then we're going to sing, chamber singers will sing Dominic Diorio's A Dome of Many-Colored Glass, which is a new composition. It was just written last year, has only had two performances before us up to this point.
Wow.
And Dominic, actually, and I have a long history now. He took my previous job in Texas.
How about that?
And so, which is how I got to meet him during that interview process. But then also now he just got the job at Indiana University. In fact, after I had programmed my music for this year. So he's coming up to work with our singers on this, and it's really going to be a treat to have that opportunity.
It's always special when you get to work with the composer himself or herself. You have the opportunity. You know, our Music of the 21st Century gives our students that opportunity. But any chance they have the opportunity to ask the composer, here's a living composer.
Right.
You know, we can't do that with Brahms. We can't do that with Mendelssohn. But
right.
we get this opportunity to say, well, what did you want us to do here? Or what were you thinking when you wrote that? I think that's fascinating.
That's right. And it also gives us a chance to showcase one of our stellar percussionists here, Patrick Speranza, who's playing really a concerto-level marimba part. It's remarkably difficult, and he plays it amazingly well.
Right. You know, our percussionists play with such finesse and such
yes.
mastery. They truly take their music seriously. They come at that. They spend their time honing it. And then when they perform it, regardless of how difficult it is, it always comes off beautifully.
That's great music.
Yeah.
You would have no idea listening to him play that what he's doing is as difficult as it is. It's really
right.
great.
And then Emily Barnash is a solo.
That's right. Yeah, a very challenging solo in the second movement of the work, and she's doing a great job on that as well.
This has been quite a semester for the chamber singers.
Boy, it has. Yeah.
Because you've already done one performance. Mm-hmm. Then you're invited up to be with one of the great professional a cappella choirs in the
right.
world. And now you have this opportunity to perform with another chamber choir here. And then you'll be on the Holiday Gala right around the corner.
That's
as
right.
Well.
And then reading and carols immediately after that. So
the music never ends.
It doesn't. And the kids are really loving it and doing just a great job. I'm so proud of their work.
It's great to have them have this opportunity to learn what life is like as a performer. Because these folks, even though they're carrying full loads as academic mm-hmm. students, they're still performing a great deal, which is what musicians do.
That's right. And the other thing they're starting to get used to, which is great, is the quick turnaround from one thing to another. You know, we just performed 2 weeks ago at this point, so mm-hmm. it's only 3 weeks between concert cycles for them, and they're learning a full new, about 37 minutes of music
right.
in those 3 weeks. It's really exciting to
which
see
which really
them do
shows
that.
Them the value of sight reading, their ability to sight read. You know, the farther you can start into the process with good sight reading skills, and then how efficient your rehearsals can be.
That's right, yeah. You know, we had a wonderful moment with Voces 8 where I asked them if I could give Voces 8 a little sight reading test, and and they were up for it. And so the kids said, well, how are you going to be sure that they haven't sung it before, since, of course, Voces 8 has sung a huge amount of choral
right,
music,
right.
and so I wrote a little chorale for them to sing, and and they just first
picked
time
it right up and went
note perfect.
Yes,
and just to see the expression on our students' faces, you know,
right.
just of that. Oh, wow!
They
can
do that.
Singers can really sing
right.
perfectly anything you put in front of them.
Yeah,
I mean, okay, maybe it wasn't perfect,
right.
but it was pretty
right.
close.
Yeah, and for a single reading.
That's right.
You know, I often found that myself conducting a university ensemble and then conducting a professional ensemble. The professionals get two or three rehearsals and off we go.
Yeah, that's right.
And it really forces you to be very careful about how you program your rehearsals, how you're managing your rehearsal. But it also requires the students to really raise up to this high challenge.
That's right. And I figure, you know, that is our job here, to get them ready for that professional world.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and they're certainly getting plenty of experience here at DePaul doing that. And thank you for putting them through their paces, as
yes,
it were, and for bringing us some great music. We're looking forward to this performance on Sunday, November 4th at 3 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Matt Champagne here for a quick producer's note. This week's guest for our 5-minute iPod brought us a piece of such beauty that I couldn't bear to play only 5 minutes of it. This week, you're going to get the whole thing.
So this week, we're stranding one of our double majors. This is Stefan O'Neill, a double degree student in both the School of Music and the College of Liberal Arts, a degree in music performance and also a degree in mathematics. Welcome, Stefan.
Thank you.
So we're shipping you off. You're being sent away to a desert island, and unfortunately, the only iPod we have to give you can play 5 minutes of music. That's all. You can play it as much as you want, but it's the only 5 minutes of music you'll have until we come back to get you, should we even choose to do so. So this better be really good. What's your 5 minutes?
You know, with all the wonderful music out there, I find the choice surprisingly easy.
Oh my!
For me, hands down, my favorite piece of all time and the top of my list would have to be the Bach Chaconne in D minor for unaccompanied violin.
That's a great, that's a very good choice. So what brings you to that choice?
Brahms once wrote to Clara Schumann that Bach, in this one simple piece for one simple instrument, captured all the greatest emotions and passions ever conceived in the human race. And he thought if he could even entertain the idea contained in that piece, he would not be able to handle it psychologically. Right. And I have to agree with him. The piece is so simple and so powerful, and it's by far the greatest work of art in any genre I've ever encountered.
Aaron Copland said something similar, you know, as he went through his different periods. He said that he wanted to say what he had to say in the simplest terms possible. And I think Bach certainly does this beautiful, profound work in very simple terms. Thanks for bringing it to us.
My pleasure.
Have a good time on the island.
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depauw.edu. Our student producers are Bia Daggerford, Anna Gatdula, Adam Luman, Frederico Poppy, and Matthew Skiba. Our online editor is Veronica Pedrell, and our show is produced and recorded by Matthew Champagne in the Judson and Joyce Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePaul University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thanks for listening to our show. Keep music in your life, and have a great week. Thank you.
It's Music for Life.